Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So Don't Ask, Don't Tell is ending. But how?
There are a series of implementation and legal issues that lawyers in this building, as well as in the Department of Defense and the Department of Justice, are working through. And obviously working through a longer and larger implementation policy process.
That was White House spokesman Robert Gibbs. And let's jump right into our lead conversation today. How to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell with Kevin Barron, Pentagon reporter for Stars and Stripes, the newspaper that covers the U.S. Army, and Michelle McClure, executive director of the National Institute of Military Justice at American University Washington College of Law. Among other things, she wonders about reenlisting military members who were involuntarily discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Kevin, Michelle, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kevin, I'm a straight male Army private who says to my sergeant, "Sir, I am uncomfortable sleeping in the same quarters as people who could be sexually attracted to me. It's no different from why men and women are housed separately, sir." What's my sergeant's response?
Right now it would be, "Don't worry, because there are no openly gay men in the military yet, because it's not fully repealed." And then the second thing they're going to say is, "Deal with it." From all indications, there are no indications. There's no chance that there's going to be any separate sleeping facilities, showering facilities, bathing facilities, get any accommodations given to heterosexuals who are afraid or don't want to do those activities.
So here, the answer is, private, deal with it.
Yep.
Michelle?
As far as I can tell, I mean, we've asked a lot about this, and it just seems that answer after answer from commanders is, and in the official report that came out on November 30th, is that it's completely impractical to try to build those facilities, separate the force.
Michelle, same question. What's my sergeant's response, and who trains him?
Well, I think I agree totally with Kevin that based on everything that I've seen coming out of the Pentagon, that is going to be the response. And who trains the sergeant? It's the lawyers. What I imagine is going to happen is really along the lines of what is already happening in the military. There's a requirement for at least yearly training on sexual harassment, fraternization, things along those lines, and there's already built into that a component of not harassing people because you think that they're homosexual, that sort of thing. I think that would be beefed up quite a bit under the new policy, but I agree with Kevin. I think the response from the military is going to be, deal with it.
Listeners, any questions or suggestions for how to implement Don't Ask, Don't Tell? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. For Michelle McClure, Executive Director of the National Institute of Military Justice at American University, and Kevin Barron, Pentagon reporter for Stars and Stripes, the newspaper that covers the U.S. military. And Kevin, I apologize. I think I misspoke before and said that covers the U.S. Army. You cover the whole military at Stars and Stripes, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. That's okay.
Do you expect implementation to be more difficult in some of the forces than others?
I think there'll be more to address. The main difference that's been highlighted for several months is that the Marine Corps, and particularly those Marines who are in combat positions, are by far were more opposed to repeal in the surveys that came out, and their leaders spoke out early and often about being more concerned than the others have. There's been a little bit of history to this when women were integrated into surface ships in the Navy, for example. You know, some ships now have separate bathrooms. Others will use bathroom shower facilities in shifts, for example. But as far as, you know, force-wide, I don't see how there's going to be large accommodations made over from one versus another.
You're not saying there would be showering and shifts by declared sexual orientation, mm-hmm. are you?
No, I'm not, and it's not even clear whether the military will require anyone to declare a sexual orientation. In fact, that was asked yesterday in the morning gaggle, the press briefing, daily press briefing with the Pentagon spokesman. You know, when a recruit comes in and they, you know, whether they check male or female, they're all going to check a sexual orientation box, just like some, there are some voluntary surveys that catch troops and recruits on the way in and ask them different things about, you know, everything from race to do you want to participate in certain head injury studies, things like that. And they just said, with that answer, and I mean, with that question and a lot of other questions, they just don't know yet.
So we're not going to go from don't ask, don't tell, Michelle, to must ask, must tell, right?
I don't see that happening, no.
Michelle, what about the issue of reenlistment for people who were discharged under don't ask, don't tell? It was 14,000 people for telling, none for asking, by the way. What kinds of discharges did people get who were dismissed for somehow telling they were gay and lesbian? And what if they want to re-up?
Right. Well, those are certainly the pertinent questions. Certainly among those 14,000 or so that are estimated to have been discharged during the 17 years of this policy, there's, I would say, probably a large percentage of those individuals who, in the years since they've been discharged, have gone on to fantastic careers. They're entrenched in their careers, their families, that sort of thing at this point, and don't have a desire to come back in. But there is a decent percentage of individuals who've been kicked out, especially the ones who have been discharged fairly recently and involuntarily separated, who want to come back in, the Lieutenant Choys and the Margaret Witts and those sort of folks. And for them, they still do have a hurdle because there's, for most of the individuals who've been discharged because they were involuntarily discharged, meaning that they were kicked out, they usually have a code that will not permit them to reenlist in the military. And it varies a little bit across the services as to exactly what the code is and that sort of thing, what the requirements are or the prohibitions. But getting that code changed and whether that's going to be, if the Pentagon is going to say that needs to be a case-by-case basis or whether it's going to be a blanket, we're going to change everybody's reenlistment code who was kicked out under the policy, that's all up in the air at this point.
So the law itself, as far as you know, Michelle, did not specifically address the folks who were discharged?
The repeal law?
I've
not seen anything that says exactly how that's going to happen, no.
And Kevin, same as far as you know?
Correct, yeah.
Let's take a phone call. Dave in Morris County, you're on WNYC. Dave, thanks for calling.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I was an Army officer in the early to mid-90s when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was implemented. It was my responsibility to train my troops on that policy. And so, you know, I can recognize that now the new policy will come into effect and will fall on those junior leaders. And the comment earlier that just deal with it. It's a little simplistic, but in essence, that's the beauty of military service is you can be ordered to adjust your conduct, and that will happen.
Kevin, you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, not just at the junior leaders, but the example from the weekend was the Commandant of the Marine Corps, the top Marine himself, General Amos, who last week was still advocating against repeal, at least at this time, and going so as far to say he thought that the distraction of the repeal would endanger lives of Marines at war. And then on Sunday evening, after the vote was passed and the bill was passed, he put out a statement, as he said he would, saying that he would be the first person to lead the repeal and to show the Marines that, you know, they will follow good order and discipline and treat each other with dignity and respect. You know, whether they do, we'll see. There's a little bit of double talk with that. There's lots of the commanders will, if you press them, will say, hey, they're a big society like any other. There are going to be some troublemakers, and there's going to have some problems. But they have ways to deal with those people just like they do for any other types of problems.
And let me ask the caller, Dave, from your experience, what about for troops who just think homosexuality is a sin and the conflict, the dissonance that will cause them when they're ordered to treat them as anybody else and live with them? That would be a lot of the Marines, at very least, and maybe a fair bit of the current Army, right?
Well, I think if we can focus on the conduct, and that's, you know, that's one thing that we in the military have always been pretty good at doing, not trying to wrestle. That bothered you. And if the roommate was actually engaged in a form of sexual harassment, now we have a conduct that we can pursue under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. If the conduct was, I don't know, he was just being gay, now you have a problem, private, because now you don't understand, individuals' rights. And, you know, sorry that you come from a background that has that sort of morality, but that's not a military ethic, and that's not, you know, in the Army we have certain values. I'm sure the Marine Corps has a similar system of training to say what is and what is not being a Marine. And, you know, at this point now, homosexuality is not in the equation of what is or is not.
It's just someone's status, and I hear what you're saying. Behavior is what the Code of Military Justice is based
it's
on.
And conduct. Unfortunately, the previous policy defined conduct as just making a statement saying, I am gay, was defined as homosexual conduct. That was laws in the original policy.
Dave, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Yvonne in Park Slope. You're on WNYC. Hello, Yvonne.
Good morning. I'm calling because I'm concerned about what may be some of the same problems that women and other minorities have in the military right now. Not that I am not for homosexuals being integrated into the military, but I know from what I've been hearing all the time that women get sexually harassed by men in the military, including rape. And I think the problem is being underestimated. People talk about gay people harassing straight guys. I think the more of the problem would be straight guys harassing gay people, because a lot of our voluntary enlistments are from conservative parts of the country where there's a lot of machismo and et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's something that should be happening, but I think we need to be realistic in terms of what kind of struggle everybody's going to be up against.
It's a great question. Michelle McClure, how would you answer that?
Well, I'd answer it the way when I was asked a similar question the other day. I don't think that every homosexual in the military is going to immediately come out, first of all, because what they're going to look for and what's going to be key to keep from having very many incidents of the harassment, because as the caller said, I mean, that is a reality. So there's going to be a percentage of the military that's going to be unhappy about the change in policy. And what's going to be imperative is the leadership response. And if you do have, and even in today's military, I mean, I was a military officer, a military lawyer for over a decade, and you saw harassment based on perceived sexual orientation and things like that, even under the current law. So it's not that it's not happening now. Will it happen more in the future? Probably, but that's where it's going to be absolutely essential for the leadership to crack down on that, to make sure that they're doing the sorts of briefings that I was speaking about of preventing sexual harassment, and if it actually occurs, punishing it and making an example of those individuals.
My guests on WNYC, as we talk about how to implement Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Michelle McClure, Executive Director of the National Institute of Military Justice at the American University, and Kevin Barron, Pentagon reporter for Stars and Stripes, the newspaper that covers the U.S. military. And let me play you both a clip of Congressman Louis Gohmert, a Republican from Texas who voted against the repeal. He makes a case here from the House floor about potential problems with retention.
Now, we've heard, how does it make us safer to lose thousands from the military? And good question, because the hundreds I've heard from that I didn't bring their quotes down here have said, you pass this, and I'll tell you personally, but I will not say it in the presence of my commander. You pass this, I will not reenlist.
So, Kevin Barron, do you at Stars and Stripes expect this to be an issue? Will troops who are ready to face IEDs in Afghanistan really be so afraid of gays in the military that they'll run and hide in civilian life?
Well, this came up in the working group report, too, and they said that they did hear the same thing, but they also said that historically, soldiers said the same thing when women were going to be integrated and on ships. They said the same thing when African-Americans and racial integration happened in the last century. Jay Johnson, the Pentagon's counsel, said, that's what they found, that afterward, the actual cases of anybody taking off didn't match the rhetoric of those threatening beforehand. Not to mention, you're not exactly going to be able to go. They said outright that they do not recommend allowing people to get rid of to get out of the military just because they disagree with the policy change. They have a contract to sign, and the military is not going to let you out just that easy.
No, but it's the question is retention. The question is, will people who would otherwise reenlist, and will they not reenlist? Straight troops who don't like this in any significant numbers.
Well, the Pentagon thinks, based on the report, that no, there's not going to be a wave of people exiting rather than reenlisting. This has come up mostly by, I think, mid-range officer corps is the worry of the people that say they would do this. But again, people from the report itself says historically this just didn't happen, and they're not afraid that it's going to happen, despite the statements of the congressman and even and others who have said they've heard the same thing by some of their commanders. So we'll have to just wait and see.
And we have a related question on our website. I think you kind of just answered this, but Arnold asks, can a service person cut his service short honorably on the grounds that he never volunteered to sign up for this regime? And so I think you just said the answer to that would be no, you signed a contract for a certain period of time.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you won't be allowed to leave honorably or otherwise, just based on this, because you disagree with it, even on religious grounds, as you mentioned before. The report says clearly, everyone is entitled to their religious beliefs and nobody wants to infringe on those, but when it comes down to these personnel matters, you have to find arrangements and treat each other with dignity and respect. That's part of the honor, courage, commitment codes of these services.
Related question from Andrew in Piscataway. Andrew, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about chaplains, and especially evangelical chaplains, who as part of their religious beliefs have strong opposition to homosexuality, and I'll take my question off the air. Thanks.
Thank you. Michelle, what about that? We have seen reporting that there is certainly a fair amount of preaching about homosexuality being a sin on the part of some of the chaplains. There is an evangelical population within the military. So what happens to these folks? Can they preach that on the one hand and not be considered part of a problem of good military discipline for doing so?
I think there is room for some problems there, and I'm not sure exactly how DOD is going to resolve that. Now, having said that, I find it hard to believe that none of the evangelical chaplains or the Catholic priests, for example, who also the church opposes homosexuality, at least conduct, I find it hard to believe that none of these ecclesiastical individuals who are associated with the military have ever had anyone come to them who was homosexual and seek guidance from them. I would think that their interest in, doing what's right and helping those individual soldiers, airmen, Marines, whatever, would trump individual beliefs, but I do think that there may be a shift. There may be, the chaplains are kind of unique. They have to be licensed by their own congregation, their own faith group, and serve basically at the
the acquiescence of that faith organization. So there may be some who say, we don't want our chaplains to be ministering to the individuals in the military anymore, which I think would be unfortunate.
Before you both go, Michelle, there are historical precedents here that we've touched on with integrating women and African Americans. Are there any other similarities or differences that you would want to point out?
Well, I think one thing that maybe people are afraid of is when you talk about integrating females or you talk about integrating the races, that was something that was visible. You know, it was a very visible thing. And I submit that it may actually be less of a disruptance, less upheaval socially in the military with this change, because unless an individual basically outs themselves, it's not as if everyone can go around, even when the policy changes, and say, who do you want to sleep with, type of thing. So I really think that there's going to be less of a problem or less of an issue than the historical context that we brought up.
And do you expect it to play out differently among straight and gay men and straight women and lesbians in the armed forces, either politically or interpersonally, Michelle?
I haven't thought much about that. I don't think so. I think some of the same concerns cross genders, concerns about, okay, now it is legal for me to acknowledge my girlfriend or my boyfriend, but is there going to be some psychological thing in the back of my commander's minds that I shouldn't be promoted because of this? And so I think there's still going to be some hesitance on the part of both genders until they see what the leadership response is, and that the leadership is going to only judge them on the merits of their work.
Kevin, anything to add on that last point before we go? I think the general popular imagination would be much more concerned about straight male troops harassing gay male troops than straight female troops harassing lesbians or things like that.
True, and I think there have been plenty of stories of straight males harassing lesbians, actually, and there are some public stories out there of women, of lesbian women who were, forced to do sexual favors to keep themselves in the closet so they wouldn't get kicked out of the military, forced to do so by straight males who were harassing them.
Wow.
I think just a couple other issues that we never got to that might end up being the bigger ones than sleeping arrangements and showers are going to be all the legal cases that may come up from this. Everything from, on-base housing and a couple, a married couple, a gay couple will not get any kind of these benefits because... Can they, list their partner as the first next of kin if they're injured or killed? Can they, what will happen if the first transgender person walks into a recruiting site? There are a lot of issues like that that I think people have really kicked the can on, and we'll see how many of them some of the advocacy groups want to test.
And we will keep kicking the can over time and obviously covering and discussing the implementation of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So Kevin Barron, Pentagon reporter for Stars and Stripes, Michelle McClure, Executive Director of the National Institute of Military Justice at the American University, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. And coming up next, I think the Tea Party only cares about government spending. We'll talk with an advocate for lower immigration, who gives the Tea Party a lot of the credit for defeating the DREAM Act. Stay with us.